I gave the Vedas, and there are so many Vedic verses. In the higher planetary systems, there's 100 lakhs of Vedic verses. So it's 100 times 100,000 Vedic verses.
And most of those,
possibly 96% of those verses, do not talk about serving Krishna and loving Krishna and getting knowledge, but they talk about worshipping this demigod and worshipping that demigod and performing this sacrifice to get something material in this world. Why? The Vedas come from Krishna. They're absolute, they're true, but why does Krishna recommend sacrifice for material things? Is that the human beings in this world, and not only the human beings, but every living condition, living entity in this world has selfish desires, and we are here because we are envious of Krishna. We don't want to serve Krishna, but rather we want to be in the center ourselves. Ishwaraham aham bhogi. The rest? Siddhaham
Balavan Sukhi.
I am powerful, I am happy, I am the enjoyer, I am the controller, things are meant for my pleasure. And this is the basic mood of every conditioned soul in this world. Everything is meant for my pleasure.
Now, Krishna gives
to these people,
he offers them the Vedic system of sacrifice.
You want to get pleasure? Okay. If you do it in the Vedic way, following the Vedic formulas, what's going to happen? You will become elevated.
But rather, if you try to become happy and fulfill your sensuous desires in a non-Vedic way, what will happen? You will become degraded.
And we see this in contemporary
civilization. That no one has any desire everyone desires to enjoy themselves, but no one desires to enjoy in a religious way. Rather, they have given up religious ways to enjoy, and they think that religion gets in the way of enjoyment, and rather, they want to enjoy how, any way they possibly can. No restrictions. Get married, get divorced, get married, get divorced, get married, don't get married, have a girlfriend, have a boyfriend, have sex with pigs, dogs, cows, anything, it doesn't make any difference. Cheat, earn money, steal, lie, kill, beat, cheat. Oh, we did that earlier. There's a lot of cheating. So much. It doesn't make a difference. If you were in my way, I'm going to kill you. You're in my way. You're my enemy. Never thinking. Based on the principles that we learned in the second chapter, never thinking that I'm an eternal soul and I'm going to pay for everything I do. So irreligiously, people are trying to enjoy. Eat anything, drink anything, any intoxication, gambling, everything, sinful. So human beings who try to enjoy themselves irreligiously, degrade themselves, because the tendency in the material world is to go down. Ignorance. And then the result of that is what? The loss of the human form of life. Who do these people make their heroes? You read in the newspapers, just degraded people, and they follow them. So, this Vedic system that Krishna is establishing here, and this is the basic principle of the Vedic system, is meant to give people who have material desires an opportunity to enjoy themselves in a religious way so that they become elevated slowly but surely, instead of degraded slowly or rapidly but surely. So people are passionate. And if they follow the Vedic system to enjoy themselves, passion means you have material desires. So if one religiously tries to satisfy his material desires, gradually he will become purified and elevated. And if one irreligiously tries to satisfy his selfish passionate desires, he will become degraded. And ultimately, due to the mode of ignorance, he will lose his human form of life and become degraded to hell, suffering, unlimited suffering. So to give those living entities a chance to become elevated, Krishna gives the Vedic system and says, be happy with this jaga, these sacrifices. Enjoy yourself. Okay, enjoy yourself. You want to enjoy yourself? But enjoy yourself religiously. And then gradually you will live happily and also get liberation. But don't think, he doesn't tell them, don't think that you have to give anything up. Because people don't want to hear that. And if they hear that ultimately if you take this to this path, Vedic path, you're going to have to give everything up and you're going to have to become renounced, no one will do it. So therefore, be happy, Krishna tells them. Be happy, enjoy yourself, but religiously and vigorously. Text 11. The demigods. Now this is, now in the previous verse, in 10, Prabhupada says these sacrifices, or the verse says that the sacrifices are actually meant for Vishnu. Sacrifices for Vishnu. The verse itself doesn't mention Lord Vishnu's name. But Jagavai Vishnu. That all sacrifices are meant to please Vishnu. And the demigods who the sacrifices are directed towards are like the universal form, Adi Devata, the universal form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. The demigods, being pleased by sacrifices, will also please you. So, it is strictly business. You perform some sacrifice, Om Swaha, I don't know how it goes. Do you always do sacrifices? Let Vishnu be pleased, not so much Vishnu. Let this one be pleased, Vayu, let all the demigods be pleased. Let them take this, but the result, what I want, is that I will enjoy myself. I will get health, wealth, happiness, wives, husbands, children, land. My enemy will die. Yeah. So many sacrifices like this. So the demigods, being pleased by sacrifices, will also please you. So if you satisfy the demigod, they will bestow upon you your desires by the grace of Lord Vishnu. And therefore, prosperity will reign for all. The demigods will be pleased, and you will be pleased. This is the basis of the Vedic system. It's basically what's called business friendship. You have some friend in the material world that you're doing business with and you have a relationship, but it's based on you satisfy me and I will satisfy you. In charge of the various necessities of life, the demigods, being satisfied by the performance of jaga sacrifice, will supply all necessities to you. Don't act irreligiously. Get your needs met. Act religiously. So what is the nature of these sacrifices? And in the next part of the sloka, but he who enjoys such gifts without offering them to the demigods in return is certainly a thief. Stena bhunte stena eva saha. That means that if you enjoy as a thief without giving to the demigods, if you just want to take in this material world and not give back to the demigods, you're a thief and you will be punished. Now, here is the basic Vedic system. And it's meant to elevate one gradually. So the first principle is what? That you want to enjoy yourself, you have to follow rules and regulations. If you don't take up that, your passion will be degraded to ignorance and you will suffer in your degradation. But if you perform sacrifices to please the demigods, what is the mentality that you have to adopt that will elevate you? If you don't adopt this mentality, you'll become degraded. The mentality basically has two parts. You can start just by saying it has one part. One is that I am not the supreme, all-powerful person. That if I want to become happy, I'm going to have to satisfy someone else. That means that someone else is better than me and more powerful than me. And I have to please him for my happiness. That is the basic principle that someone in the Vedic system accepts that someone is greater than me, and the second part is there's authority. Because if someone is greater than me, I'm willing to follow their authority. I'm willing to become happy the way they want me to be happy. This, in and of itself, the surrender to authority, even if it is selfishly motivated, surrender to the Vedic system, even if it is selfishly and materialistically motivated, in and of itself, that surrender is purifying. And just the opposite of that is contemporary civilization. I will do it by my power. I don't need anyone's regulations. By my power, I'm going to become happy. I'm going to get my wealth. I'm going to get my fortune. I will get my beautiful wife, my beautiful children, my job. I will be successful, riches, gold, everything, position. It is done by my power. And don't try and stop me. This is material. This is, isn't that the material world? And if you become my friend, we can work together. And if you become my enemy, just by the acceptance of the authority, even for enjoyment, that is purified, and that is the basis. And that's the most simplest understanding of the difference between Vedic civilization and contemporary civilization. In contemporary civilization, there is no acceptance of authority. Everyone is free to enjoy unrestrictedly in any way they feel. Vedic system, acceptance of authority, accepting that someone, and for my enjoyment, I have to please another. And see how contemporary civilization is becoming more and more creative. Previously, and in some parts of the world still, but it's being eroded very quickly, people would try, the parents would serve, even not my generation, but the generation before my generation, my parents served their parents. But with my generation, that was finished. What to speak of the next generation? What to speak of the next generation? In India, it appears to me maybe there's one generation left in most, when the children still have, or maybe in the villages for a few more years. But it's finished. There is no duty, no concept of duty. It's just selfish pleasure now. Whatever gives me that sense pleasure now, I'm going to do it. So, when you accept the Vedic system, there's two levels of pleasure. The first is this life, the second is next life. So when one worships the demigods for pleasure in this life, what does he do? He goes to the demigods and he prays for, he contacts a priest, a Brahmin priest, and he arranges for a sacrifice to get his health and his wealth and his land and his cows and his crops and health and his children, etc. But when the priest is giving a lecture, because when he's reciting the verses, he also will give some pravachan, some lecture. He'll talk also about that. And he'll also talk about, when you're doing the jaga, he'll also talk about higher pleasures. According to his consciousness, generally, if he's doing this type of karmakanda activity, he's going to talk about higher pleasures, such as going to Swagaloka, the heavenly planets. And if you think you can enjoy here in this world, you just hear about heaven everywhere. First of all, there's no lines to get on buses and things like that. Just like when Prabhupada in 1967 was asked actually by Tamal Krishnaraj, this was during the Vietnam War days when they were taking people into the army. Tamal Krishnaraj in San Francisco asked Prabhupada, "What's it like in Krishna Loka?" Prabhupada's answer was, "You won't be bothered by the draft board. There won't be people trying to induct you into the army there, because That is, at that time, possibly that was the limit of the understanding of what happiness is. So when we are engaged in material life, all we think about, because we don't have very much knowledge, we just think about being healthy, being rich, etc. But then when we hear from the priests that there's something better than that, where there are beautiful gardens everywhere, and the atmosphere is angelic, it's sweet, and there's food, and there's no work, and you live not for 100 years, but you live for thousands of years, and everyone is beautiful, there's health, there's no disease, there's no old age. There's huge mango fruits and streams of nectar. Everything is so sweet and wonderful. So immediately upon hearing that, the nature of one's desire during the sacrifice changes and goes from pleasure in this life to heavenly pleasures, that means pleasures in the next life. And inherent in understanding that I would much rather perform sacrifices for pleasures in my next life, you also, without even knowing it, you get some spiritual knowledge. And what is that spiritual knowledge? If when you start thinking about your next life, you're understanding that you're not your body. You understand that you have a next life. Everything is in this life. And you're starting to plan for that. So immediately, necessarily, by following the Vedic system, one's knowledge is going to increase. And not only that, when one's knowledge increases, and this is the basic principle that we're actually learning here, although it's not going to be discussed clearly until the next chapter, but one becomes elevated from passion to goodness by transcendental knowledge. Of the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, the title of the fourth chapter. So gradually, by hearing, during the sacrifice, by hearing, one gets transcendental knowledge. And also, one's giving the fruit of one's work. Because this is what this verse said, he who enjoys such gifts. So you're getting the bounty of the earth, and you're giving back to the demigods. That means, what does that mean? It means you have to renounce some of the fruit of your work. And if you're very, 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 very passionate, you don't want to give anything in charity. Give anything back. You just want to take and take and take. Why? Because your desires are unlimited. You just want more, more, more for me, 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 me. But then by giving up the fruit of one's work back to the demigods, one gets a very pleasurable feeling and realizes it's much more pleasurable to give. And gradually, even though there's selfish motivation, gradually people, by giving slowly, 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 they become detached. This is all within the realm of karmakanda, the karmakanda section of the Vedas. But then, when one hears, when one does sacrifice for pleasure in this life, he hears about Swargaloka. Similarly, when one hears about Swargaloka and does sacrifices for the heavenly planet, what does he hear about? That Swargaloka isn't perfect at all. Because sometimes even Indra becomes fearful of the demons that attack, and Indra has to hide. And Indra gets thrown out of heaven. The demons, the asuras, throw him out of heaven. And he has to die. And Brahma even dies. And all the living entities who go to all these different lokas, Janaloka, Mahaloka, even up to there, everyone in the material world must die. So on hearing that, and this process may take one life, it may take 10 lives, it may take 50 lives or 100 lives, but it's gradual elevation. And it depends a lot on one's association, actually, who is performing the sacrifice. And if one comes in contact with a pure devotee, then everything goes so quickly. So one gradually hears about the fact that, actually speaking, Abrahma Bhuvanaloka Puna Arjuna, that there is no place, from the highest place in the material world down to the lowest, all are places of misery where repeated birth and death take place. That the very nature of the material world is Kalayama Shashvatam. It is temporary and it is miserable. This is the nature of the material world. It is inseparable from the material world. Just like wetness or sweetness is inseparable from sugar. And wetness is actually inseparable from water, except when it's in the ice state, which is unnatural. So similarly, misery is inseparable from the material world. So one hears these things. You mean even on Swarga Loka I can't be happy? Oh no. Is there anything I can do about that? And then if one gets a Gyanakanda priest, he'll tell them, actually, you are not this body, you are a soul. Or more than likely, you are Brahman. And then one desires, then the nature of one's sacrifice changes. And also, not only that, but one is doing all these sacrifices, one's experiencing the material world, and he's suffering. Because one can't avoid that in the material world. Even if one is very pious, still one will suffer, ultimately die. And not only his father will die, he'll see his mother die, and his grandfather die. So gradually, by performing this Vedic system, one gets knowledge and one gets detached. And that means, practically speaking, that one is raised from passion to goodness. And that's actually what's going on in the Vedic system. So in text 12, it says, but he who enjoys such gifts without offering them to the demigods in return is certainly a thief. But one is gradually getting purified by the process of giving, and hearing, and experiencing the very nature of the material world, one gets purified. And also, there's an interesting point that the Acharyas make to connect this verse to the next verse. So Arjuna is saying, okay, he says that, okay, to get all the necessities of life, I have to perform sacrifice. But I have an idea. My plan was to go to the forest. And I won't need to get any necessities of life. I'll just dig up the earth and get some roots and there's fruits. And in this way, I'll go to the forest and I'll just live so simply. I won't need to do sacrifices. And my necessities will be taken care of. So therefore, I won't be a thief. I'll just live in that way. So Krishna answers that in the next verse by explaining, my dear Arjuna, even if you go to the forest, you still have to eat. And if you eat anything that is not offered to Krishna or offered in sacrifice, then you are eating sin and you will become contaminated and trapped by that sin. So therefore he says, the devotees of the Lord are released from all kinds of sins because they eat food which is offered first in sacrifice. Others who prepare food for personal sense enjoyment verily eat only sin. So even if you go to the forest, Arjuna, and try to avoid the Vedic system through this renunciation, you'll still be caught by sin. So you cannot avoid it because you have to eat. You have to breathe. And breathing, you're killing, and stepping, you're killing, and eating, you're killing. You cannot avoid sin in the way that you, through the renunciation as you are speaking, as you are thinking. Now, in 14, 15, and 16, we'll complete this section on this karmakanda idea. How one progresses further in consciousness and what the different stages are called. Now, because Krishna has just spoken about food, how even if you go to the forest, you're dependent on food. Krishna will now teach Arjuna that because he's dependent on food, he is dependent on God and therefore on Vishnu. And therefore, one has to ultimately serve Vishnu, which is the point that he's ultimately going to make. So all living bodies, so you're depending on food. Even if you go to the forest, you're dependent on food, and the best way to eat your food is that you should eat food that is offered first in sacrifice. And then in 14, all living bodies subsist on food grains. It is impossible to avoid subsisting on food grains. And there's a very interesting point about contemporary civilization here that will come out. All living bodies subsist on food grains, which are produced from rains. So food grains are produced. We need food, and the food grains are produced from rain. And where does rain come from? Rains are produced by performance of jaga, or sacrifice. So when one pleases the predominating deities, then it rains. And then because it rains, we can the grains come. And because the grains come, we can live. And jaga, and where does the sacrifice come from? Because in doing these, the sacrifice comes from prescribed duties or karma. So part of sacrifice, part of karma is sacrifice. Then in the next verse, this karma or regulated activities are prescribed in the Vedas. And the Vedas are directly manifest from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So here is the point. Well, this is basically what we're talking about. This whole system, as we've been talking about, is the Manashrama system. Consequently, the all-pervading transcendence is eternally situated in acts of sacrifice. So here is the point of these two verses. That from Vishnu comes the Vedas, and from the Vedas come one's prescribed duties. And from the prescribed duties that one does comes sacrifice. And from the sacrifice, what comes? Rains. And from the rains come grains, and from the grains we live. So therefore, ultimately, since the grains come from the rains, and the rains come from the sacrifice, and the sacrifice comes from the prescribed duties, and the prescribed duties come from the Vedas, and the Vedas come from Krishna, ultimately our existence is dependent on Krishna. And not only that, the second point is that the prescribed duties, because they come from Krishna, the sacrifices, because they come from Krishna, they are not different from Krishna. So Krishna is actually situated in those acts of sacrifice. And that is what Krishna is called. Therefore, you should be dependent. You are dependent. You are. Not you should be. You are dependent on Krishna. And therefore, as he's saying at this point, Vishnu. And therefore, because you are dependent on him, you should serve him. That's ultimately what Krishna wants to tell us. You have to serve those of you if you are dependent. Otherwise, you are a thief. You will be punished. Punishment means that you will have to suffer. And if one doesn't perform these sacrifices, which are no different from Vishnu, because they come from the Vedas, which are no different from Vishnu, the result of that, if one doesn't do it, is text 16. My dear Arjuna, one who does not follow in human life the cycle of sacrifice thus established by the Vedas certainly leads a life full of sin, living only for the satisfaction of the senses. Such a person lives in vain. Why does he live in vain? Because he doesn't take advantage of his human life to become full of God. He's missing the opportunity. He's enjoying, but in a sinful way, and therefore he'll become degraded, and he loses his human life. So this is basically karmakanda. Because, why is it karmakanda, and how does karmakanda become karma yoga? It is karmakanda because there is no transcendental objective. Even if one is thinking, I will enjoy in this life by the Vedic system, there is no eternal positive result. Even if one goes to the heavenly planets through karmakanda system, there is no eternal result because one has to come down again. So this is karmakanda. But, when one performs the same duty, even if he has material desires, he performs that same sacrifice, but for the pleasure of Krishna, knowing that these demigods are just the universal expansions of Krishna, and by pleasing them, Krishna is pleased. And I want to please Krishna, even though that he's doing the same sacrifice, and even though he knows, even though he may want to get elevation himself to the heavenly planets. Because his desire just to please Krishna, ultimately, even though he may have material desires, that is called karma yoga. Or more accurately, sakam karma yoga. That he's doing karma yoga, using his work to connect him with the Lord, karma yoga, but he's sakam, he has material desires. So he's going to do his prescribed duties to please, to enjoy himself, yes, but to please Krishna, but he's going to be giving, renouncing some of the fruit of his work to Krishna. Sakam karma yoga. Sa with, kam, desires, but karma yoga, using one's work to connect. And the result of that is what we'll explain tomorrow to end this section. That one will become elevated and become nishkam without desires and still he'll turn, but he has no desires to fulfill. And why he'll work? Because usually people work. People don't work just because they like to work. They work because they want something. What Krishna is going to recommend is dutiful work, detached work, not to get anything, not sakam, not to fulfill our material desires, but dutifully, do it because it's supposed to be done. And ultimately, what he'll really say is, do it for my pleasure. So there's different ways. There's one person, just like an example is Bharat Maharaj. When he was the king, it describes, before he renounced and went into the forest, it describes in the Bhagavatam that he would perform these same Vedic sacrifices, but for Krishna's pleasure in pure devotional service, and he would feel transcendental ecstasy. So one could do a sacrifice like this, because he was seeing the demigods, he was worshipping the demigods, but he was seeing them as Krishna's representatives, so he was serving them, and in that way serving Krishna. So one could do the same sacrifice as bhakti. One could do the same sacrifice, not trying to get any, to get some material, be completely detached. I'm just doing it dutifully. And one could be doing the same sacrifice to get the material result, but ultimately trying to remove his material attachments so he can attain Krishna's feet. Or one could be doing the same sacrifice just to get simply a material reward. Same sacrifice, different consciousnesses, different results will come. And then, again, one can give up all sacrifices and not try to become happy by the Vedic system, but become degraded by the mode of ignorance by doing whatever he wants to do. So, ignorance, passion, elevated to goodness through following the Vedic system. Is it clear? Sort of, yes. Questions? What's your name?
I was wondering if you could explain how we could actually teach that to people on the street.
On the street? Here, why don't you take this Bhagavad Gita? Well, that will come up. The application of it comes a little more because that question is actually brought up. How do you deal with people? How does the person who is detached instruct people who are attached? And we find a problem is that we tell people who are attached that there's no value in material things, right? So we preach to them like that and so strongly. And then what happens is they become detached from work. And then what do they become? Hippies, exactly. Or something like that. Or what the later version of hippies are. They become detached for work. So rather what Krishna is going to explain is that instead of preaching them renunciation, what you should try to do is preach to them to get them to be detached from the fruit of their work and engage their work, the fruit of their work, in a way that it will elevate them. That means give it in the service of Krishna. Directly, more or less, be expressed. That's their sacrifice. Detachment from. See, that's how it works. When you're attached, the way you become detached is by giving. And the way you give is through knowledge. So knowledge and detachment will go side by side. And as one's detachment increases, one's knowledge will increase. And as one knowledge increases, one stature. Because just like, if you think that you're going to die tomorrow, you'll become detached from so many things. Right? So if it's tomorrow or the next day or the next day, you know, knowing, just knowing that simple thing that the body is temporary, that's knowledge. And that the soul is eternal. Immediately, some detachment comes to the heart. And there's, what's that word? There's the Markata Varaya. No, no, that's the monkey one. What's the crematorium one? Huh?
Sasan Vairagya.
Shmatsan Vairagya. So that means when you go to the crematorium, transcendental knowledge temporarily comes into your heart because you see someone who is your very close and beloved relative burning. And then everyone gets very detached for a few seconds and very grieved, like that. Smasan Vairagya. But then they go away. And that Vairagya is finished. But a little transcendental knowledge comes like that. Yes, he is burning. He has, his body has died. Me too, that means. But I don't want to think about that and then we forget it. But immediately when that happens, everyone is very detached. Someone's dear son dies, and immediately he becomes detached for some time. He cannot do his work, he can't do anything, he doesn't care how he looks, he doesn't care about eating. So knowledge actually will make us detached, and therefore Prabhupada distributed, one stressed so much his distribution of books. I heard him say this in Australia. So why are we stressing book distribution? Because it is distribution of knowledge. Knowledge brings detachment, but detachment is negative. It also brings attachment to Krishna. You shouldn't be attached to matter because it's temporary. It will cause us trouble, misery, because it's temporary. So we'll talk more about that as this chapter continues.
Two questions. You're saying a range of use for acts of sacrifice. How would you explain if somebody asks, why do you see that in rain?
That was Krishna's argument to his father against the Govindan Puja. Why, please, Indra? It rains everywhere. So you're using taking Krishna's place. It's hard to defeat Krishna. But the idea is that if Indra is not satisfied, it doesn't rain anywhere. That's the basic principle in Karma Kanda. That the whole system will not work. Or will rain on the sea, but it won't rain anywhere else. Because you don't deserve it. So if he has excess water, he won't give it to you. He'll pour it on the ocean. The pious people. Therefore, it's said in a desert, it is an impious place to live. Impious people take birth in deserts. Because that piety isn't there, and we see as people are becoming more impious, the rains are not working properly. Second question.
Explaining how the basic science of Vedic culture is accepting authority.
Yeah, that's the most basic principle, accepting authority.
Even in some kind of karma yoga, then it's motivated by material desire.
Not ultimately, but here we are in our position, just like we want to serve Krishna and we have material desire. Just by saying, I don't want my material desires not to be there, they don't disappear so easily.
No, but at the beginning of taking on the yoga lady, he wants to control his material desires, then he wants to raise his colors.
But he has Krishna as his goal.
But how is that different from material cost, for instance? I said that he's not.
A material
cost, for instance, instead of a demigod, I should have a cost. And he's giving me. My salary and my pension
scheme
and my security, if I please him, I'm guaranteed employment.
But I'm
not.
Wait. But what does that have to do with karma kanda and sakam? Which one is that? You say, in your analogy.
If somebody takes.
No, but you want to please Krishna. See, if you could say that, okay, complete the analogy. If you thought that boss is in this position by God's grace, by Krishna's grace, and he's giving him his power to be the boss, he's giving him intelligence, he's giving him his money. So it's actually Krishna. You do your duty, and because you're working ultimately for Krishna, you're going to give Krishna some of the fruits of your work. then it's, that's practically how devotees nowadays would do sakam from the yoga.
But the person takes to do the yoga that is not devotee is Krishna, because he doesn't know Krishna.
No, if he only knows the demigods, then it's not yoga. The point is that you have to have a transcendental objective for it to be yoga. If it's a temporary objective, it is not yoga. That's the division. When it becomes the difference between sakam karma yoga and karma kanda is that the yoga has a transcendental objective, even though the person has material desires. We see this when you preach. This is the level that we have to preach. Most of our preaching is not. We convince people, we give transcendental knowledge that you are subordinate to God, therefore you should serve Him, even though you have material desires. Akama sava kama va moksha kama udaradi kibrena bhakti yogena yadeta purushapara. You should work, no matter that you have material desires, you should still worship Krishna. And then gradually you become purified. And you see that these material desires, these anarthas in the heart, they're just getting in the way of my happiness. And you beg Krishna to remove them. Oh, Krishna. Hey, Krishna. Krishna, Krishna. Ay, ay. Please, my heart is so polluted and therefore I cannot taste the sweetness of service to your lotus feet. So gradually that happens. Chaito dharpana marjanam. The heart becomes cleansed by chanting. Therefore, everything that we do in the Krishna consciousness movement is accompanied by chanting Hare Krishna, because that cleanses the heart.
You mentioned about the giving, and giving,
Krishna consciousness movement, the same principle is there.
In the villages, when the management were taking care, this is going back 50 years ago, they were cleaning the whole village. You know, they were taking everybody for that. Now everybody is performing cheap sacrifices in my temple. So,
see, there's two levels of it. On one's, the question was a good one for the temple. Why does the temple president, if we're not supposed to be attached to the fruit of the work, when we don't do our work properly, why does the temple president yell at us? Why is he upset?